From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins. Sitting in today for Tony is our own Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships for Family Research Council.
Welcome to this Thursday edition of Washington Watch. This is Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships here. I'm sitting in for Tony Perkins. Well, in the wake of two mass shootings last weekend, President Trump and First Lady Melania met yesterday with families who lost loved ones and those who were wounded in both Dayton, Ohio and El Paso, Texas. But he got some major pushback from Democratic presidential candidates like Joe Biden and Beto O'Rourke, as well as some in the liberal media. In just a moment, I'll talk with Dr. Ronnie Floyd, the president and CEO of the Southern Baptist Convention's Executive Committee, about a Christian response in the midst of a politically divided America. In my second segment, we've got a victory story. After 57,000 people signed a petition demanding Apple News re-enable LifeSite News's channel in the app, Apple backtracked and re-enabled LifeSite Channel's actual app in their store. I will talk with John Henry Weston, their editor-in-chief, about the good news. At the bottom of the hour, the Christian Employers Alliance won a major legal victory in a religious freedom lawsuit that ultimately exempted them from having to participate in the abortifacient mandate of Obamacare. I'll talk with Jim Mischel, their president. And in my last segment, we've got education in the news. A Maryland Christian school stand affirming biblical marriage cost its place in the state's voucher program. Plus, in light of unfair developments for high school males pretending to be females and competing in female sports, a Title IX complaint has been filed in the Department of Education's Office of Civil Rights. And Selena Sewell and two other track mates will have their case examined by the federal agency. I will talk with Meg Kilgannon, FRC Education Research Associate, about both issues. In the wake of these two mass shootings this past weekend that left 31 people dead and dozens injured, President Trump addressed the evil and hatred that animated the two gunmen on Monday from the White House. Let's listen.
We are outraged and sickened by this monstrous evil, the cruelty, the hatred, the malice, the bloodshed, and the terror. Our hearts are shattered for every family whose parents, children, husbands, and wives were ripped from their arms and their lives. Together, we lock arms to shoulder the grief. We ask God in heaven to ease the anguish of those who suffer, and we vow to act with urgent resolve. The shooter in El Paso posted a manifesto online consumed by racist hate. In one voice, our nation must condemn racism, bigotry, and white supremacy. These sinister ideologies must be defeated. Hate has no place in America. Hatred warps the mind, ravages the heart, and devours the soul.
Yesterday, President Trump and First Lady Melania met with the families who lost loved ones or those who've been wounded in Dayton and then El Paso, Texas. Here's what he had to say.
Let's see if we can get something done. And Republicans want to do it and Democrats want to do it.
I think background checks are important. I don't want to put guns into the hands of mentally unstable people or people with rage or hate.
He sounded like a president with a plan, but some Democratic presidential candidates, like Joe Biden, took a completely different tact, attacking the president and blaming him in part for the mass shootings, insisting he was not welcome. Let's listen to what Biden had to say.
He says guns are not the problem in mass shootings. The issue is mental health. It's a dodge. Hatred isn't a mental health issue.
The former vice president also taking on what he called the president's toxic tongue.
It's both clear language and in code. This president has fanned the flames of white supremacy in this nation.
Well, he wasn't the only one who piled on. Beto O'Rourke joined the fray and had this to say.
This president who has sought to make this country afraid of places like El Paso and the people who live here, and immigrants specifically who he's described as rapists and criminals, he is in large part responsible for what has taken place.
We live in a country that is not safe, that refuses to pass laws to end gun violence in the United States. We live in a country where we have a president who demonizes communities like this one.
But it was perhaps just this comment from Lawrence O'Donnell, an MSNBC commentator, that proved exactly how politically riven our atmosphere is in America. Listen to this.
Well, Donald Trump proved once again today that he is the weakest man and the weakest mind that has ever occupied the presidency when, as he was leaving the White House and speaking to reporters over the usual helicopter noise in the background, which is the only noise that ever makes any sense when Donald Trump is speaking, the president was asked what his position is on banning assault rifles. And the president said, well, I can tell you that there is no political appetite for that at this moment. And then a lot of Trump gibberish followed after that. But the weakest president in history never said what his position is. The man who ran for office lying to his voters that he was the only one who could actually get things done in Washington basically said there is nothing that he can do if Republicans don't want to do anything. He couldn't possibly lead them, even though that's in his job description as the leader of the Republican Party. And of course, Donald Trump was lying when he said there was no political appetite for banning assault rifles. A new poll out today shows overwhelming political support for banning assault weapons, 70% support. Donald Trump then went on his photo op tour of Dayton, Ohio and El Paso, Texas. He did it the way a dictator would do it, exactly the way Vladimir Putin would do it. He did not allow any members of the news media to actually see what he was doing in Dayton or in El Paso. And so we have nothing to report to you about what President Trump did or said when he visited hospitals in Dayton and El Paso.
Well, to say that our atmosphere here in America is politically charged and highly volatile would be an understatement. So addressing it today is Dr. Ronnie Floyd, my first guest. He is president and CEO of the Southern Baptist Convention's Executive Committee and served for 30 years as senior pastor of the First Baptist Church of Springdale, Arkansas. And in addition to writing over 20 books, he served as president of the National Day of Prayer Task Force. Dr. Floyd, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you very much. It's great to be on with you today.
Well, what I hear is a great deal of infighting and highly inflammatory rhetoric. So it sounds like we have a bit of a spiritual problem on our hands. And in fact, you've written that there are three responses to a divided America that Christians should actually express. And you said government cannot fix us. What do you mean by that?
Well, government ultimately will not have the problem, will not have the solution, because the heart is where the problem is. It doesn't matter whether it's constant division that can never come to resolve, or whether it's the shooter of some of whether it's an individual, or whether they're doing a horrible mass shooting that is horrific, like happened a couple of times, at least in the last week. And so, you know, all is heartbreaking. It doesn't matter whether you're on the end of the grief side of this, all the way to the political side. It's heartbreaking to be so divided at a time when the country needs us so much to be together, to stand with these dear people that have lost their loved ones, and to stand with both of these cities that are in desperate need of our support. And there are so many just like that. But the country has got to find a way to come together. And ultimately, when I say that government cannot fix us, the bottom line is the answer is not in government. The answer is ultimately in the hearts of human beings, changed by the power of God through prayer and through seeking the Lord and having the power of Jesus Christ in our lives.
And how better to express that than through the power of prayer, which is something that you mention. And that is something, it sounds like you believe, as do I, that our nation desperately needs.
Well, there's no question about it. I've written all kind of books about prayer and articles and everything else. But the bottom line is that while many people believe that prayer is inaction, prayer is not inaction. Prayer is your greatest action. Mm-hmm. And that's not saying that we do not need to act. Obviously, there are things that are broken. We need to fix them if we can fix them. We need government and politics to do what it can do. And all of us that believe in the power of God and the power of prayer, we need to pray like God really hears our prayers, and that God can really bring anything together and heal the hearts of hurting people, and that God can heal the heart of a hurting nation. Our nation's in pain today. Our nation is broken, and the ultimate answer to that is going to be somehow, some way, that we cry out to God and plead with God for the next great awakening to happen in the United States, because that is ultimately the number one key to us overcoming the pain and the brokenness that is so prevalent in our culture today.
And you mentioned something that's so simplistic and yet so meaningful. You quote from John 13:34 about loving one another, but how do we practically do that in such a politically divisive atmosphere?
You know, what's really sad about where we are is that we don't believe the best about one another, and that's really tragic. The church could be a great model of that, of Christians believing the best about one another. But those of us who are followers of the Lord, and those of us who are into what a deep Christian worldview would be, we would believe deeply that we have to trust God ultimately, and trust people at least to the point until they break that trust. But we need to love people. We need to give people the benefit of the doubt. And what you're seeing today in the nation is that everybody's judging, everybody's casting blame, and everybody is pointing fingers, but it's not. You know, what's really sad is that we're doing this at a time of tragedy, but it's been happening, and it's been happening for the last few years, and that's not the answer. We need to own what we can own in relationship to what we're responsible for, and we need to deal with it and make it right. But ultimately, I'm telling you, the Lord is the only one who can bring unity. I really do believe that unity is supernatural. You know, the scripture says over in Ephesians 4 that we need to make every effort to be together in peace and in the bond of love. How desperate we need to be diligent in that. And we need to do everything we can. I mean, I would love to ask many of those players, have you made every effort? You know, have we made every effort as a nation to do what we can do about these matters and these issues? I don't know the answer to that. I'm not in politics or government. I'm into the church, and I can tell you, I'm trying to make every effort I can to see God step into this nation and change it to the glory of God.
Oh, amen. Dr. Ronnie Floyd of the Southern Baptist Convention, who has been my guest today, he also mentions that we need to remind ourselves that our future is not in the hands of government. It is in the hands of a sovereign Lord. What a reassurance in a very conflicting, difficult time like this. You're listening to Washington Watch. I am Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships here. I am sitting in for Tony Perkins today. Coming up next, some good news. LifeSite News has been restored in the Apple App Store after 57,000 petition signatures. We'll be right back on Washington Watch.
Happy birthday to you.
In states like New York, Virginia, and Vermont, radical legislation has been written legalizing abortion late in pregnancy, when babies can feel pain and are able to live outside the womb.
Happy birthday to you.
They've gone even further, repealing protections of infants born alive, allowing killing even after birth.
Happy birthday, dear.
Congress has yet to protect the life of every newborn baby. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com to send Nancy Pelosi a newborn hat to show Congress every new life should be welcomed with warmth and love, not hate, not death. End birthday abortions. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com.
Happy birthday to you.
Paid for by Family Research Council.
Are you concerned with the state of our nation? Do you want to protect and promote religious freedom, the sanctity of life, free speech, and our children's educations? Today we see a growing threat against our values on the news, on our college campuses, in our elementary schools, at our public libraries, and in our courts. Every year in Washington, D.C., thousands of conservatives attend FRC Action's Values Voters Summit. From October 11th to the 13th, come to our nation's capital to mingle with and hear from key conservatives who are bringing real change to Washington, D.C., and learn how you can too. FRC President Tony Perkins will be there, along with Ali Stuckey, Bill Bennett, Dana Lash, Oliver North, and U.S. House and Senate leaders. The 2020 elections are right around the corner, so this is one weekend you won't want to miss. We provide free scholarships for students. Register online at valuesvotersummit.org or call 1-877-372-2808. That's 1-877-372-2808.
Are you looking for timely and honest coverage of the latest news? Do you find it difficult to sort out what is true and what is false from the media? Family Research Council is here to help. FRC President Tony Perkins' daily Washington Update email newsletter addresses the most important current events affecting religious freedom, the protection of life, marriage and family, and more, not only in Washington, but around the world. The Washington Update's daily articles cover a range of topics, from underreported stories about transgender activists' efforts to infiltrate our schools to updates on court cases fighting for religious freedom, parental rights, and the protection of life. Don't miss this critical, in-depth analysis of the day's most essential stories that are shaping our nation's future. Learn more and subscribe by visiting frc.org/update. Again, that's frc.org/update.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships here. I am sitting in for Tony Perkins on this Thursday edition. TonyPerkins.com is our podcast website. Follow Tony on Twitter at T Perkins or me at Sarah P. Perry. Last week, Apple News abruptly disabled LifeSite News' channel in their app store and deleted all of their content from the platform. After receiving 57,000 petition signatures, the Apple News team informed LifeSite that they have reevaluated the channel. Thankfully, LifeSite's channel and articles are once again available on the Apple News app. So joining me to fill us all in the behind-the-scenes details is John Henry Weston, the co-founder and editor-in-chief of LifeSite News, the first life and family issue news service operating on the web with 5 million page views a month. He has also helped to lead the Canadian National March for Life, and he and his wife, Diane, have 8 children. So congratulations to you, sir. John Henry, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much, Sarah. Good to be with you.
So before we get to the specifics of the victory, remind us a little bit of the backstory here. First of all, we know what Apple News is, right? This is sort of an amalgamation of all of the news sites, and yours in particular was previously available in the App Store. Is that accurate?
That's right. So they are an aggregate site. They've actually got a really nice design, like Apple usually does with their products. They put out a really good design. They put out our stories, the LifeSite News stories, on their app and make it look really, really fantastic, actually. It did take us a while. I mean, it took us 6 months to get onto Apple News. They had a lot of back and forth with them. So it was a struggle. So we were very pleased to announce, a couple weeks ago that we were on Apple News. But then abruptly, a few days later, they removed us. And then really without explanation. And that was really something, because they removed us saying only that we had somehow offended their policies. And they said specifically that the LifeSite channel, I quote, the channel content shows intolerance towards a specific group. They refused, of course, to tell us what group or anything else about it, but that, as you said in your opening, they had removed all of our content and our channel from their site.
Okay,
so that's where we started.
Intolerance to a particular group intolerance, A, not defined, or B, that particular group not defined, because, of course, what is easier done in the shadows, why bother to turn on the light? So yeah. You applied, if memory serves, back in November to be part of the news platform. Is that right?
That's right. That's absolutely right.
So and there wasn't an initial problem here. Everything's going along swimmingly, and then suddenly, out of the blue, you receive this notification?
Yep, out of the blue notification. No explanation, no call beforehand, no email to say, oh, we're reconsidering this, there's a problem. Nothing. Just boom, you're gone. And, you know, one thing I have to say on behalf of LifeSite, we're really thankful. But not for what you might think. We're not actually so thankful that we're back on Apple News. We're so thankful that America woke up. Tony had me on his program last week. All sorts of people did. And MRC, Newsbusters, Breitbart, all of them covered this. And this really woke America up. And it, as you said at your opening too, 57,000, now 58,000 people signed a petition to Apple News. And actually, our petition platform allows for postcards. Over 1,000 people sent postcards to Apple News complaining about their removal and so of the LifeSite channel. They put us back on. But what I'm most grateful for is actually the activism. Pro-life, pro-family, pro-Christian people in America stood up and wouldn't take this ban on free speech, ban on freedom of the press. He stood up for the truth of Jesus Christ. And to me, that's the most amazing thing.
What an encouragement to know that activism actually results in action. And in this circumstance, amen. Apple, of course, being the 800-pound gorilla, could very easily have said, okay, 58,000 signatures, the coverage is coming from sites that we would deem probably likewise intolerant, and could not have done anything except for the fact that, as we know, these things tend to, they repeat, and people wake up and they discover that the censorship of LifeSite News one day might be the censorship of, for example, Breitbart News or the Daily Caller the next day. In fact, even senators like Marsha Blackburn have had her tweets censored. So big tech proving in this instance to have done the correct thing. Has there been any elaboration from Apple on why they were, quote, rethinking or reevaluating the channel?
None whatsoever. Just saying they reevaluated and we're back on, which, I mean, that's fine and good. But what it really shows, it shows the power of people speaking out. And this curtailing of free speech by big tech is happening all over the place. Just today, many of your readers or viewers might not know yet, but perhaps they do. Mitch McConnell, of course, he was ill, and Antifa came to protest at his own house, at his home, and saying all sorts of filthy things. They captured that on video, tweeted it out, and Twitter banned his campaign team page for putting out the absolute horror that happened to him, and Twitter bans not Antifa. Oh, no, bans him. So, I mean, this censorship by big tech is going absolutely crazy. So I'm very, very thankful that people are standing up, that these 58,000.
I am as well. I am as well, and I have to tell you that I think the only thing that will make a difference until there is some more specific overt action, whether that's of a regulatory nature or not, whether or not there is a free speech charter of any sort that is drafted and complied with, the only thing we have at our disposal right now is our voices and our platforms. And the way that LifeSite News uses their platforms gives us the encouragement to keep speaking truth. John Henry Weston, thank you so much for being with us today on Washington Watch. Some good news for LifeSite News, which we encourage you to visit. You are listening to Washington Watch. I am Sarah Perry, sitting in for Tony Perkins on this Thursday edition. Well, coming up next, the Christian Employers Alliance won a major religious liberty victory and is now exempt from the abortifacient mandate of Obamacare. I'll talk with Jim Mischel, their president, coming up next on Washington Watch.
Did you know that Planned Parenthood was using taxpayer dollars to perform abortions? Recently, the Trump administration made changes to a healthcare policy called Title 10. The changes to this policy now eliminate the loopholes organizations like Planned Parenthood were using to receive taxpayer funding for abortions. Planned Parenthood was hiding behind terms like reproductive health care and services like cancer screenings and contraception distribution, while in reality, they were making money off of abortions. This shift in funding will benefit community health centers that provide needy families with family planning resources and health services, regardless of their ability to pay. It will also benefit pregnancy resource centers that provide care and free resources to women who may be experiencing an unplanned pregnancy. This policy decision is the right move to help and protect American lives. To learn more, visit frc.org/Title 10. That's frc.org/Title 10.
Hi, my name is Bailey. I am serving as an intern at Family Research Council, and it has been a life-changing experience. Interns join FRC's team of experts as they embark upon the mission of advancing faith, family, and freedom in public policy and the culture from a biblical worldview. The FRC internship is a 12 to 15 week program designed to educate and inspire university students who are passionate about public service and who believe that a biblical worldview is fundamental to the reformation of government and culture. As interns, we receive the opportunity to work alongside and be personally and professionally developed by FRC's team of experts. This paid internship offers free housing in the heart of DC, which allows us to be fully immersed in the fast-paced political climate and to build a community with other faithful conservatives in our nation's capital. For more information and to apply, visit frc.org/internships. That's frc.org/internships.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry, sitting in for Tony Perkins today. TonyPerkins.com is our website for the show. We are encouraging you to go there because we have, particularly today, some information and resources you will want to follow up on. Christian Employers Association has won a major religious freedom victory on behalf of its current and future members. The U.S. District Court for the District of North Dakota has ruled that the abortifacient mandate under Obamacare, as well as the subsequent accommodation burdens, they are essentially too heavy a burden to bear for religious exercise of Christian Employers Alliance's members and violate the Religious Freedom Restoration Act of 1993. Joining me now to explain and celebrate the victory is Jim Mischel, the president of the Christian Employers Alliance. Jim, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Sarah. I really appreciate it.
So let's talk a little bit about your organization. Your organization, CEA, was founded in 2016. Can you tell me a little bit about why it was formed and ultimately the aim of the organization?
Yeah, I'm a CEO of a manufacturing company out in the Seattle area, and I began running into Christian employers around the country that care deeply about their employees, the country, the culture. And we decided, you know, these Christian employers employ millions of people around the country. We really need to come together for the common good to make a positive impact. And especially around issues of religious freedom in the workplace and other issues such as the healthcare issues. So it was something that just drove myself and my family to reach out to other Christian employers and come together as a membership organization to address the critical issues of the day.
What a tremendously needed resource in this day and age. How can people join CEA if they're interested?
It's pretty simple. Go to ChristianEmployersAlliance.org. You could click on a membership screen, sign up, and become part of our organization.
Well, to the case at hand, because this is a situation in which precisely the reason that you formed the alliance was ultimately put to the test. This victory was similar in nature to the Supreme Court's ruling in Hobby Lobby, which also objected to the abortifacient mandate under Obamacare for religious organizations, but it was also slightly different. Can you explain that?
Yeah, this is an important distinction for a lot of Christian employers whether they're for-profit organizations or non-profit organizations, to understand. So the Hobby Lobby Conestoga Woods victory was a wonderful testament to the Supreme Court protecting religious freedom. Unfortunately, shortly after that victory, the Obama administration passed new regulations, which a lot of people refer to the accommodation, which basically required employers, insurance companies, or third-party administrators to actually take on the role of providing abortifacient drugs. And so really, it was almost a slap in the face of the Hobby Lobby decision. So that's why you saw cases like Little Sisters of the Poor mm-hmm. go to the Supreme Court and many others similar to that. If you recall at the time, Justice Scalia passed away, and so even the Little Sisters of the Poor case was ultimately remanded because of a 4-4 decision at the court. So throughout the country, Christian employers were really in a difficult situation, none of them actually having protection because of the Hobby Lobby decision. So the Christian Employers Alliance decided to file a lawsuit on behalf of its members to ensure that those our religious beliefs were protected, as the Supreme Court originally ruled in the Hobby Lobby decision. So this is extremely important to existing for-profit companies, nonprofit organizations, to be protected still.
So you all are really at the tip of the spear on this. Even though we've read much about Little Sisters of the Poor and Hobby Lobby, this particular lawsuit is going to have quite a number of reverberations for Christian employees and Christian organizations. And this ruling, does it also mean that your Christian business members are off the hook for any fines connected to the Obamacare mandate?
That is a great question. So under the mandate, Christian employers could have been fined $35,000, I believe $600 per employee. Now, to put that in perspective, a family business like my own would pay tens of millions of dollars in fines to the IRS. And so it was one of the critical issues being considered in our case. And the judge did rule in our favor that none of our members, and what's more important, none of our future members could possibly be fined under the mandate. So it's a huge win for Christian employers, without a doubt. Of course, they need to be members to be protected. So that's one of the reasons why we have our organization and the importance of signing up with the Christian Employers Alliance if you're a Christian business owner or a Christian nonprofit. But those are huge fines. You know, our members have, in combination, have tens of thousands of employees. So you're looking at hundreds of millions of dollars of possible fines. These are huge amounts. And most Americans don't know, if you provided no health care whatsoever, your fine was $2,000. But if you failed to provide coverage for abortifacient drugs, you're going to be fined, $35,600. Quite a difference over a minor issue like that.
Well, Jim Mischel, president of the Christian Employers Alliance, will have more information at tonyperkins.com. We encourage you to check out the CEA. Judge Hovland said that the CEA and its members will suffer irreparable harm to their ability to practice their religious beliefs unless the government is restrained. Encouraging words. Well, I am Sarah Perry sitting in for Tony Perkins. Coming up next, we will talk education in the news and what two cases have in common with our Meg Kilgannon, FRC's Education Research Associate, coming up next.
We live in a time of great political division, and this division only intensifies during campaign season. The toxic tone in politics can be discouraging, which makes it a very real temptation for many Christians to wipe their hands of politics altogether. After all, if God is sovereign and controls the heart of the king, as Proverbs says, do we really need to get involved in the messy world of politics? Because political engagement can be divisive, shouldn't Christians abandon politics and direct their energies toward more spiritual pursuits? Christians are called to submit every area of their life to God, which includes how they engage in politics. But they are called to engage biblically. This requires Christians to be prepared to follow their political theology to its logical end and vote for candidates and parties that support clear biblical values. For more information on the Christians' call to engage in politics, visit frc.org/engage. That's frc.org/engage.
Radical abortion laws in New York, Illinois, and Vermont are challenging the sanctity of life. These laws have lifted the few existing restrictions on abortion in the name of family planning and mental health of pregnant mothers. Americans need to take a stand and defend the rights of the unborn. Family Research Council is sending Congress 90,000 baby hats as a reminder that babies should be welcomed with love and warmth, not potential danger. Supporters have already funded over 45,000 hats. We are over halfway there. Join Americans across the nation and donate $9 to send a powerful reminder that young lives need to be cherished. When you take action, we'll send you an end birthday abortion certificate that will remind you to pray for born alive babies who are facing the danger of being killed outside the womb. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com for more information. That's endbirthdayabortion.com.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins, president of the Family Research Council here in Washington, D.C., and I would like to invite you to join my wife, Luana, and I, along with Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin and former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, for FRC's Israel Tour, June the 2nd through the 12th, 2020. Whether you're sailing on the Sea of Galilee, standing in the ruins of Capernaum, or journeying up to Jerusalem, Israel is unlike any other place on earth. You'll relive the final earthly days of Jesus as you pray in the Garden of Gethsemane. You look upon Golgotha and stand in the garden tomb. The reality of his story will come alive in a transformative way. This one-of-a-kind tour will not only allow you to explore the land of the Bible and the roots of our Christian faith, you'll also hear firsthand from some of Israel's political, defense, and religious leaders. Join us June the 2nd through June the 12th for this life-changing experience. For more information, visit TonyPerkins.com or call 844-872-5155.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry, sitting in for Tony Perkins today. TonyPerkins.com, and here's why that's important. We discuss the Christian Employers Alliance with Jim Mischel, their president, and their win against the Obamacare, also known as the Affordable Care Act, abortifacient requirement. They have been exempted. Now, there is a regulation. It is a proposed rule that is currently pending, Section 1557 of the Affordable Care Act, that is currently under consideration. The previous administration's expansion of the definition of sex in Section 1557 includes the termination of pregnancy and gender identity, as opposed to simply the letter of the law, sex used as its ordinary meaning. Well, we are attempting to send 20,000 signatures to HHS Secretary Alex Azar, and we encourage you, find that link by going to TonyPerkins.com. Encourage HHS to use the term as its plain meaning indicates and not expand that federal language into terminology that includes a requirement to pay for abortions and includes gender identity, which is something we'll be talking about in my next segment here. TonyPerkins.com. Click on the link to submit your comments to HHS on Reg 1557. Well, we've got education on the docket. It's an issue that I feel passionately about, as does my guest, who is someone I am particularly fond of. And I will tell you, between the two of us, we have seven children and have managed to survive, for the most part, at least heretofore, in the public education system, with our wits and our morals intact. So one case out of my home state of Maryland found that Bethel Christian Academy affirms the biblical view of marriage in its student handbook and therefore must be cut out of a state-sponsored school voucher program because of sexual discrimination. And in light of unfair developments of high school males pretending to be females and competing in female sports, high school student Selena Sewell recently graduated out of high school in Connecticut, had her attorneys file a Title IX complaint against the Connecticut Interscholastic Athletic conference. So the stories together, sex is back in the news in education. And joining me with her excellent analysis is Meg Kilgannon, FRC's Education Research Associate. Meg, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Oh, thank you, Sarah. Thank you so much for having me on. It's always great to talk to you.
Well, let's tackle this story about the private Christian school first. And I am particularly incensed about this situation because we have friends and children that we mentor down in inner city Baltimore. Now, this school is in Anne Arundel County, so let me start by saying that. It's in a slightly more economically stable area. But I will say, for schools like this, private Christian schools who rely on voucher monies from the government to be able to supply tuition for needy students, there have been six students now kicked out of the voucher program, unable to attend the Christian Academy, Bethel Christian Academy, and leaves them without recourse because of, shock and awe, a biblical definition of sexuality and marriage at a biblically based Christian school. So I'm a little upset about the fact that this not only implicates school choice, and is not only in my home state, but also has now disenfranchised these six students, some of whom were minority students who were getting tuition assistance through the program. Do you agree that this is sexual discrimination?
It is most certainly discrimination. It's definitely religious discrimination. It's saying that a school that a private school with religious beliefs can't participate in a voucher program, even though the parents who send their kids to that private school are paying taxes into the state system that's funding the voucher program.
Right.
They're not allowed to choose this for their family. It's just ridiculous. It reminds me a little bit of the boundary debate that we're starting to have in my county of Fairfax, where the ridiculous school board that we have here wants to start shipping kids around to different places in the county that they choose because they think that the kids need to go there, but they would never let me as a parent choose to send my kid out of a school district that's not performing well into another school area that's performing a little better. So this is classic do as I say, not as I do. That always happens in these kind of education cases.
This is a little bit of a sort of big brother mentality. This is the Marxist
right.
perspective of education. If we slot you into the little future worker paradigm, we, as the government, know better than you do, parent,
right.
about where your children ought to go to school. And we will be hanged if we will use our hard-earned tax dollars to fund your religiously zealot education. I can't find any good news about the fact that these six students have lost their tuition at this point. But I do know that Bethel Christian Academy is taking the case to court, and our friends at Alliance Defending Freedom are representing them, which is great news. But I want to take a look at the handbook, which every student receives, every parent receives, that says, and I'm quoting here from the handbook, Bethel Christian Academy supports the biblical view of marriage defined as a covenant between one man and one woman, and that God immutably bestows gender upon each person at birth as male or female to reflect his image. Therefore, faculty, staff, and student conduct is expected to align with this view. Faculty, staff, and students are required to identify with, dress in accordance with, and use the facilities associated with their biological gender. So not only can the state not profess to be ignorant of what the precise values and biblical morals were, the orthodox teachings of Bethel Christian
right.
Academy, number one, but number two, who's to say that they may not have seen a lawsuit for a little boy who wanted to use a little girl's room because at nine he decided that he would identify as a girl. This seems a little bit like it was simply a matter of time in today's climate, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, it just calls into question so many things. I mean, did they review the handbooks of other schools that are in this Boost program before they approved them for the program? This isn't some secret that Bethel Christian Academy is keeping from the world. They're stating it very plainly that this is what they believe. And if you believe it too, please come to this school. And maybe if you don't believe it, you might still be able to come to this school if you don't object to us believing it and you keep your views to yourself, right?
Right. Right.
But if you think about the situation in reverse, the Anne Arundel County Public School System can have a policy that states that they do not believe in a view of marriage that is this view of marriage. And if I have a different view, that I have no right to object to that. I have no grounds to in any way protest that or object to that because the school system has stated that that's the way it's going to be. So it's very hypocritical.
Maryland is one of 14 states that provide a school choice program for K through 12 students. I have seen with my own eyes the positive effects, particularly in the state of Maryland, where there are pockets of absolutely struggling, languishing public education spheres in which, for the want of a voucher or school choice program, children are graduating with abysmal levels of literacy, mathematic proficiency. School choice gives these children a chance to elevate their education. But what I'm concerned about is the fact that this bad ruling might have a domino effect because there are not only other Christian schools in the state of Maryland, but there are 13 other states that provide a school choice program. So now, right, I think it's safe for us to assume that this may bring renewed scrutiny to the school choice option in the first place.
Well, absolutely. I mean, it doesn't seem like this case is spurred by a complaint of someone at the school who felt oppressed by this teaching. You know,
right,
this seems to be something else entirely. And so I think that it's very reasonable to expect that the entire program will be reevaluated on along these lines and possibly even, for other arbitrary reasons and other reasons that are protected as a right constitutionally, but that maybe the state of Maryland just doesn't agree with at the moment.
Well, the state is demanding the school repay $100,000 of the $102,000 it received in funding. The school itself, Bethel Christian Academy, has said, "We are still solvent. So lest you think that this has driven us to bankruptcy, by the grace of God, Bethel is still operational, and we are following very closely what this lawsuit will portend for the future of school choice nationwide." But I want to go to Connecticut and Selena Sewell's case. And Selena has herself received much press attention. She was perhaps the first and most visible of high school athletes who was directly impacted by the participation of female-identifying male athletes who participated in the same Connecticut Athletic Conference, and they actually robbed her of scholarships and possible college admission advantages to the school of her choice on athletic scholarships. But the federal government, now Department of Education's Office of Civil Rights, has agreed to investigate this Connecticut policy that ultimately abolishes girls-only sports. ADF, also representing Selena Sewell, in addition to two other minors who are yet participating in high school sports in Connecticut. So I see this, and I want to hear your take on it, that this is a great development, not only that ADF took up the cause of these three athletes, but also that the Department of Education has said, "We will formally investigate." Do you think this portends a positive development?
You know, I'd like to be positive about it, and I do think it's a good sign that they've agreed to investigate, but I just am having flashbacks to the complete weaponization of the Office of Civil Rights by the Obama administration in every agency of government. And they used that office to affect a lot of cultural change. I mean, that was one of the ways that they were fundamentally transforming America, was using that particular office to railroad a lot of policies. So I'm maybe not as hopeful as I would like to be. I do think it's a good sign that they agreed to take the case. Frankly, I was kind of surprised at that. I didn't think they'd even bother to investigate. So the fact that they're investigating is good. And I hope that it will be a really thorough and fair investigation of the situation these girls find themselves in, because they've trained and they've worked and they've done, you know, their parents have gotten up early and taken them to extra practices. I mean, you're a parent, I'm a parent. We know what is involved when your child is playing in high school sports, and when that's your child's passion and they want to compete and they want to succeed. And these girls, you know, once they start at the starting line, when that firing pistol goes off, they know that there's no way they can win if there are biological boys running against them. Plain and simple. And this is just it's a situation that absolutely flies in the face of Title IX protections for girls that, you know, we really were the first generation of women to benefit from those protections. And we were able to have sports that our mothers weren't able to have in high school and college.
Right.
You know, we were able to have those sports programs. And now our children find themselves in the position of having those programs at risk for this situation because of the idea that gender is conflated with human sex. And it's not. They're,
well, and lest we buy into the sort of trans cultish notion that there is no biological and therefore competitive advantage between trans athletes and biological female athletes, the Journal of Medical Ethics just published a study that directly counters an anti-science narrative, the one that these liberal elites have been recycling over and over again, that trans women and biological women are indeed different, and that male subjects did not lose significant muscle mass or power even when their testosterone levels were suppressed, which means they have an advantage. Regardless of how you define sex and you throw in looser terms, this federal legislation was designed to protect biological girls, but perhaps the Department of Ed will do the right thing. Meg Kilgannon has been my guest. You are listening to Washington Watch with Sarah Perry, sitting in for Tony Perkins. We'll be back tomorrow, and I'll join you then.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.